Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about episode 17, an episode that I absolutely loved. I'm so excited to get into it. I would say my favorite episode of the season, and one that was really about women's empowerment. So I really want to dedicate this episode to the two amazing people that I'll be on this conversation with, two people that are really about women's empowerment, and that is the two men that I'm so lucky to speak to on this call. So first, please welcome someone that I know is just happy to have got through Doral Geddon unscathed, my amazing co-host Mike Bloom. Mike, happy Doral Geddon. It's a concept, it's not a thing, and we made it.
Yeah, it was like, why Doral K, where we were prepping ourselves, we were stocking up on canned goods and dry supplies, but it turns out that we were totally fine with at least him not succumbing to all the advantages. I'm surprised, Shannon. I thought I was going to be the sun to your Icarus at the start of this.
Oh my god, that is literally what I almost went with. That freaks me out. Get out of my head. I literally almost went with that. That scared me.
This is our 17th straight week podcasting, Shannon. I feel like that's inevitable.
Yeah, okay. That's a fair call, but genuinely that was my option, so I'm just a bit freaked out. But anyway, I also wanted to welcome in our other guest, also just all about women's empowerment, and that is someone who is obviously the purveyor of the Chizzy Prizes, an RHAP legend, and someone whose takes I'm so excited to get in this season, 17 weeks in. Please welcome the great Josh Wiggler.
Thank you so much, Shannon. Of course, I am fully in support of women empowerment, but I am wombat empowerment is what I actually am. Much like Icarus, I too have flown too close to the sun and the gin and the Walt and the Locke and the Jack and the... I'll stop here because I know none of this makes sense to Shannon, but it makes some sense to Mike at least.
Mm-hmm. Walt rang a bell. I knew which territory we were in when we got to that.
Okay, that's not bad. Three names down and you were able to understand the connection. It feels like one of those games where it's like, list these names and you have to guess exactly what the commonality is between them. Maybe this will be... Yeah, and this will sort of be like a sub-thread of this podcast, is Josh and I trying to convince Shannon to finally watch Lost, considering how much the two of us are ardent in revisiting the show and espousing its values to everybody.
Shannon, you should watch Lost. You should watch Lost. You would have a great time with Lost. It's dramatic Survivor. It's like Survivor with supernatural crazy things that happen. It's fantastic. It's so up your alley, and you should absolutely do it. And the fact that it hasn't happened for you yet means you have an amazing, like 100-plus episode series of TV that's just out there waiting for you to lovingly embrace it. Strong recommend. Highly recommend. Go out and do it. And anybody else who hasn't watched Lost yet, go do that and then listen to Down the Hatch, the podcast that Mike and I are doing on post-show recaps. That's the only plug I'll do. That's it.
I kind of got the whole like international Survivor thing going on right now. But Josh, I mean, I don't think you realize you'd be coming on for episode 17 when you and Mike made this booking. I think that was Mike's fault. So maybe I feel like I owe it to you, considering you've watched now like 4 months worth of Survivor South Africa, which is a lot, and you made it here for what I've been calling the best episode of the season, which is awesome, but I feel like we're indebted to you for watching the entire season to come on.
Well, so Shannon, you and I, we spoke last on a podcast for, I think it was the second week of Australian Survivor, the current season of Champions versus Challengers. And I think that you were telling me, you'll get on the South Africa train. We'll talk to you at the end of, we'll talk to you closer to the end of the season for that one. And I was like, I have no idea how I'm going to be able to keep up with Australian Survivor and catch up to Survivor South Africa, because at that point the season had already hit the merge at that point, I'm pretty sure, and it just felt very, very daunting. And I think I said, I'm gonna skip the challenges is probably what I'll do. And you're like, no, just watch it on like double speed or something like that. I think in retrospect what you meant was watch the challenges on double speed.
Yeah, definitely.
And what I did was I watched the pre-merge on double speed. Oh. So I got like halfway through Survivor South Africa before I was caught up and was able to watch the merge in like actual real time, in terms of real time, like a single speed real time. But the whole first half of the season was I was flying faster than Icarus. I was really just like cruising through the season. All the same, I am here. I'm fully caught up on the cult leader, Rob. I'm fully caught up on his collaborator, Nicole. I understand Mike Bloom's deep infatuation with Darrow. Long may he reign. I have a lot of love and respect for Letitia for however long we are lucky to have Letitia in our lives. And I am also furious with the Survivor gods for introducing a freaking vote nullifier at the final five. What are you doing? So I have takes. I have thoughts. I'm ready to do this.
Okay, well, as someone who binged an entire season that is much longer than US Survivor, give us the Josh Wiggler broad take on how you felt about the season so far.
Okay, so I watched the last season of Survivor South Africa as well. I as I said to you on our podcast about Australian Survivor, I definitely classify myself as much closer to the casual side of the spectrum when it comes to international Survivor. My brain just cannot absorb every single detail the way that it seems to be able to for the long history I have had with the U.S. version of Survivor. So a lot of details get lost along the way, but how could I forget the epic ending of the most recent season before this of Survivor SA, the incredibly improbable win of Tom, the really excellent gameplay from Werner, who is just fantastic. Just so much fun in that season, and so many different characters and so many highs and lows along the way, that it was both like a really well fought season, but also just such a train wreck from a character standpoint. And I absolutely love that. That's, you know, Mike and I have talked before, both online and offline, about the train wreck seasons of Survivor and how special a place in my heart they hold. And last season of Survivor SA definitely had that distinction. This season, whether it's because I was on like a bullet train that I did not fully understand for about half of it.
Feels like it's on you.
That feels like that's,
yeah, you were sitting on a train saying, where am I going? What's the next stop?
That I think that's on me. And it took me a bit longer to feel a personal connection to this season. Simultaneously, Australian Survivor is happening right now, and I have been keeping up with that. I've been watching it as close as humanly possible to when it airs, and am fully current through that. And that, to me, has been one of the greatest seasons of Survivor in the modern era, if not any era of Survivor. It's just been so fantastic, and the characters and the gameplay have just been stunning and spectacular. So this season, in comparison, for me, hasn't quite hit that level. I think a lot of it is because, as you guys have been talking about, you know, the pagonging that's going on here, just the thoroughly dominant play from Rob, who has just been, to borrow a phrase from Coach Wade, frog marching all over the Island of Secrets here throughout the way. But I have started to come to appreciate sort of like what the arc of the season is shaping up to be for me. Maybe this is a hot take. I don't know if it is anymore. I think the circumstances with which we leave this penultimate episode really sets us up for where we are very likely going for the finale. I don't think that there's any way that Rob is going to be able to win this thing.
What?
I think Rob gets
it. Wow.
That's not what I thought you were going to say.
That is not the version of events that I see. Look, I think that that's hyperbolic. I think that that's extreme. Of course, Rob has played such a dominant game, and I would like to think that I am the type of person that if I had been blindsided by that man or placed on the jury by that man, that I would have the objectivity to vote for him to win. But that's not to say that he's been without flaws. And I think overwhelmingly, it is not without reason that we are constantly cutting away to this viciously bitter jury. Every single tribal council who are just rolling their eyes at everything that is coming out of the mouths of the dominant alliance, Rob included. But I think for me, this episode really highlighted what the theme of the season is and what the story of the season is. And it is the story of Icarus. And this is the story of people who flew too close to the sun and got shot down when they got way too high up. So I think that that's where we're going. And I don't want to just keep filibustering all the way through, so I'll let you guys talk. But that's just generally what I'm thinking as we're heading into this final episode.
Well, so on that note about storytelling, because I certainly want to get into viewing things from the lens of, okay, it's Rob's game to lose, ... and he's going to lose. Because I think that's a very interesting perspective. I will say, quite honestly, I would love to see any person win, because I really do feel like this cast is such an interesting group of characters, especially with the end game. But I honestly fear for Survivor South Africa if Rob does not win, because I'm sure if he does not, Shannon, we will do a game next week of Casuals Corner where it's going to be people saying, cancel Survivor South Africa.
And that person will be me. It'll be my tweets that we'll be reading.
That's unreasonable. We've said time and time again that it's not production's fault if a jury votes a certain way. You know, maybe with the exception of if you put in a game device that allows jurors to communicate with people that will go back into the game. But that's
or it might be production's fault if they introduce a vote nullifier at the final five that can be played at the final four that eliminates a tie and an unimmune Rob goes home because he doesn't even have a chance to go into a tiebreaker. That would be production's fault, 100%.
Yeah, I would say so. But on that note, you know, you bring up the arc of the season and the storytelling. And, you know, there has been a lot of comparisons between Australian Survivor and Survivor South Africa, obviously with them airing concurrently. I saw something online on Survivor Reddit, and I apologize for not remembering who to credit to, but I thought it was a very interesting comparison where if these Survivor seasons are like movies, Australian Survivor is like your big bombastic summer blockbuster full of big characters and big flashy things. And Survivor South Africa is more like a dark indie art house film, which is more raw and emotional and realistic. And I guess I'll put in my hot take here. I know that Mark Percy, who's done, who is very linked in the RHAP community, has been posting this as well and beating this drum. But as much as I love Australian Survivor, I think Survivor South Africa has by far the best editing and storytelling out of any Survivor iteration today. And I think this episode is a great indication of it, just because we saw so much raw emotion. We got to see in one episode how Steffi's plans that she's been building up for the past two episodes just completely crumble around here. We got to see a lot of Nicole's perspective in the game. We really got to see these five people sort of, you know, mingle and mix around one another, even though they do exclude Darrow at first. And looking back on these things as we're starting to near, you know, the finale and looking back on the season, it really has been staggering how, yes, if you look at the vote outs themselves, they have been pretty rote. But I would say that the episodes themselves, the way they've been edited and the things that we've been told and the way we've gotten to know these people, is it sometimes maddening? Absolutely. But it's never not entertaining to me, in my opinion. And a big example of that is Nicole, who I don't know if it was just this episode for some reason and the things she was saying. And I can understand why people are frustrated with her. But I would say that I think looking back on everything, I'm a big fan of characters. And I think Nicole Kapper might be one of the best characters of this
season. I love her.
I agree.
Incredible television. Love her, hate her. She's incredible television.
Nicole so is good. One of the better characters you'll see on Survivor. There's no one like her in the Survivor universe. She's amazing. And look, I completely agree that the editing for Survivor South Africa is like broadly the best of all the franchises. And I said this was my favorite episode of the season. This was one of my favorite Survivor episodes in a good long while. You know, I've loved a lot of what Australia has done as well, but this was the kind of episode where you were paid off for the 17 hours of investment, you know, a little bit less for Josh if he was doing it at two times, but a lot of investment that we've put into this season for all of these little character moments and big storylines coming through. Like, as you said, you know, the impending Duralgeddon that we were all waiting for. So Ulla's eventual implosion, Nicole and Rob, Steffi's downfall, which I have to say was hella satisfying. I mean, for me, what capped it off, no pun intended with Nicole Kappa, but that we got Steffi's patented tribal council laugh. She was crying of laughter and really nothing. As Dural, she thought sweet puppy Dural was about to be put down. And she was laughing at her blindside tribal. And that was just beautiful to me. I loved this episode so much and all of the arcs that it just really paid off. And what I loved, I rewatched that tribal council today. That 2-minute segment from when Nico asks if an idol is going to be played until Steffi is voted out is an actual thing of beauty. Like, it's one of my favorite sequences in the show. I mean, there was so much there. I mean, before that, at Tribal Council, the Icarus analogy, as we've discussed, you know, Steffi thinks it's about Dural. In fact, that's what she laughs at. And it's obviously about her. And then, obviously, after the idols are asked to be played, I put this on my Twitter. The image of Rob standing over Steffi with the idol as if he's about to put it on her and coronate her, only for the betrayal, was incredible, hilarious. Every time I think about it, I laugh with Steffi sitting there waiting for her idol that will never come. Then we had iconic lines, Nicole saying you betrayed the amigos, you know, Letitia stone cold, for me, there's always tomorrow, as she doesn't play the idol for Steffi. Like, every single character just absolutely shined in this 2-minute sequence. And it wasn't just because, you know, they were
being like, idols, what the hell's going on?
Exactly. And the jury was loving it. And I was loving it. And it was just like, this was what 17 hours of getting to know these people and these dynamics has paid off. And it was just absolutely brilliant.
It was intensely fun. That whole lead up to Steffi going home. And like, you could kind of sense it with the storytelling of Icarus. Like, you know, Rob's not coming out and saying it's Dural. And when he's like pushed on, like, are you talking about Dural? Like, he's still like finding like ways to kind of talk around it. Nicole doing the same thing. And I think at that moment, it's like, oh God, oh, this is going to be, Steffi's about to be eviscerated and she has no idea. I suppose I was confused as to why they even needed to read the votes.
I'm so glad they did. But I'm so glad I guess
I'm kind of confused as to why they wouldn't have just like said like the obvious of like, all right, well, Steffi's done. That's it.
No, I disagree.
There's nowhere for Steffi to hide.
To me, this wasn't really an advantage get in. Like, this was like Steffi got flipped on and voted out and they were all just wearing pretty necklaces. Like, I'm so glad they read the votes and that we were able to see kind of the actual voting dynamics, because she wasn't mass idled out like Suri. She had, you know, I mean, obviously Rob throws a vote on Letitia, which I still don't really understand and I don't think makes sense, but she really did have the majority of votes. And I think having that read out, and as every vote was read, we had like some amazing interaction. Even Steffi just like really aggressively like fastening her bag just made me laugh so hard. I'm so glad they read it, because this was a, you know, a tribal council of votes and really not of idols, which were more like the pretty display at the front, but not really the meat of what was happening.
I also wonder, quite honestly, if at the time, maybe like there's a lot, Josh, as you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens like in the moment at tribal council where sometimes things happen and you don't necessarily, unless you're Troy Zan, you can't really stop tribal council down and be like, oh, wait. So actually, if this happens, then technically Steffi should be able to go home. So maybe they just thought like, okay, all these idols are coming out, I guess we should just keep going with the votes. But yeah, I agree, because I mean, it's probably not great for Nicole. I mean, Nicole definitely didn't help things with the aforementioned you betrayed the amigos line, but maybe she could have hid behind the fact if there were no votes read of like, oh, Steffi, I'm so sorry. You know, you just happened to go home by default. I didn't vote for you. And I certainly did not put the female symbol next to my vote just to nail the point home. Yeah. She did. She put a female symbol.
I was blinded by everything else, because that's incredible.
But I mean, Zeke Smith once said that tribal council is theater, and none was more on display in Survivor South Africa than this. Like you said, it really felt like almost a sketch where Rob's like, okay, here's our big plan. And we'll certainly talk about their initial plan to try to swindle Rob by being like, how about we all go abstinent with our idols? Nobody, you know, dip your toes in the idol well. We're just going to stay completely dry. But, you know, she's about to get crowned once more, Steffi, Miss Immunity Idol. And then Nicole says, oh no, may I say a few words? And I feel like whenever Nicole says that, like, just buckle up, because no matter if it's just her saying something or something wacky happening, it's going to be entertaining. And I just love her speech of like, I believe that this idol belongs to courageous, secure men like Nathan, men like Rob Nathan like Doral.
Jeff rolling his eyes at the Nathan vote was just like, that's the kind of investment I'm talking about. Like, that's so funny because of something we watched 2 months ago.
Early on in the episode where Rob's like, wouldn't it be great if Nate was here and Nicole nods her head? It's like, am I taking crazy pills? She voted Nate off. Why are they suddenly coming together of like, man, I can't believe Nathan's here. If only this easily preventable thing couldn't have happened and Nate could have been here with us.
Oh my. Well, on that note, let's kind of dig in, I think, to Nicole, the person of the episode. And really, I think, you know, the character of the season. Tanya was a long time ago, and Nicole is definitely the character of the season in so many ways. I mean, to look at what she was doing this episode, for like 40 minutes of the episode, not only is she a part of Steffi's plan to blindside Rob with an idol at the final time an idol can be played, but she's leading the blindside. I mean, she's, you know, asking him not to play his idol. You know, if this is the Eric Reichenbach plan, she really is Natalie trying to get him not to play the idol, genuinely, for 40 minutes manipulating him, and then she changes to vote with him. So think about like the extreme betrayal she was really giving to everyone in this episode. Like, just incredible there. And then, so then she flips. And I want to get your takes on this, because this is going to be, I guess, you know, the big move of the episode. Because for me, I thought this was a bad move for Nicole. And I want to give her credit in so much of what she was doing. I mean, for a lot of it, it seems like she really did have Rob, who I think is an amazing player, on a string. But then she makes this flip, and I think it was a really bad thing for her game.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that she, you know, she's, but it seems to me almost like she doesn't want to win. It almost seems to me like she wants Rob to win. Like,
really? Well, which is like, crazy, because Rob wants her to win.
No, Nicole wants to win. Nicole wants to win.
If they make the final tribal council together, it's sort of just like a you take it, no, you take it, no, you take
and
it.
And then the jury gives it to Doral. Like, that's what will happen. Yeah.
But I mean, like, that's just like is what it's felt like with the whole, like, you know, the week before Nicole saying things like, if you trust Rob, I trust you. And, you know, going right back to him the way that she did this week, like, it almost feels to me like what matters the most to her, and with the whole women empowerment thing that she was talking about, and how Rob is women empowerment. And wouldn't it be such an amazing symbol if Rob, who helped all of these strong women get to the end, if he is like the person who gets to go further. It struck me that like she wants him to win. She said like the world deserves to see you shine or something.
Well,
like
she said
that
to him.
Yeah.
But to me,
like I took that like genuinely. I felt like that was legitimate.
Right. But for me, this whole move was actually not based on her relationship with Rob, and for me was misguided self-preservation. Because in her confessional, she's like, I'm going to go talk to Rob because I'm really worried about Letitia's Island of Secrets lie, which we really have to get into because I thought that was terrible. But she has actually the correct read where she's like, there's no way that Letitia got nothing on Island of Secrets, because Island of Secrets doesn't do no game for you. It offers you something. Whether if it's nothing, it means you've missed a tribal council, or you're there with other people to strategize, or you do get some sort of strategic opportunity. So she didn't get nothing. So she's right on that read. And she's correct on the read that Steffi and Letitia are, you know, a bit closer than she is with them. It seems a lot closer. And they're going to use it against her. They even say, if Rob doesn't win immunity at the final four, they'll be coming for her and using their advantage to take her out. So I think that a lot of her thinking and a lot of her turning, certainly what we were shown in confessional with the transparent edit that Survivor South Africa gives us, was self-preservation, and that's why she was turning. I just think that self-preservation was extremely misguided, because I think now she has a much better chance to get to the final three. You know, obviously, if Rob won immunity next time, they would vote her out. But so what? That's irrelevant. Like, surely if Rob wins immunity, you don't want to be sitting next to him anyway. So, like, either try and go to the end with Steffi and Letitia, or, you know, you're going out to, you're losing to Rob by getting voted out of the final four rather than losing next to him at the final tribal council. So I actually saw this as extreme self-preservation. And then getting to the women empowerment stuff, Nicole, more than anyone, needs to justify, you know, her moves. And something she said in this episode made me think, she said the word brand, and I was like, I feel like she's not just justifying it to herself, she's justifying it to the audience, and then she buys into it. And I think that women empowerment came as the next step to the self-preservation of why she was doing this, of how to make it make sense, of why she was going back on what was meant to be this inspirational all-women's thing, because Rob's more inspirational, he's more women's empowerment, and believe me, she bought it. Her voting confessional was about how, as a mother of a son, she's not going to do women's empowerment stuff that negatively affects men. And like, she really did buy into it. But I think it's always agenda and self-preservation first. And then all of the moralizing comes through after to make it make sense for herself and what she thinks the audience needs from her.
I actually like the move. I hate the execution. I think there's a world where, and this is maybe in a world where Nicole is not Nicole, so it's just a, you know, it's not a natural universe to occur in. But again, I think it's certain things like, you know, her at tribal council turning to Steffi and just kind of snidely saying, like, you betrayed the amigos. And it was just so curt and so cult that it really, I mean, Steffi left the game. And then her first thing out of her mouth and her final words is, Nicole's a snake. Nicole certainly did not help that image of her by being, you know, so transparent about, like, to your point, Shannon, like, yes, you're going home and this is the reason behind it. Because I actually feel like some of the reasoning she gave in her confessional was pretty sound. Because here's the thing. If she keeps Rob, or if she sticks with Rob and she goes to the final three with Rob, yes, she probably loses to Rob. But if she gets rid of Rob at the final four, I think she probably loses to Steffi. I think she does. I very much think she does. I think that Steffi's now, it's late coming awareness, but it's still awareness nonetheless, of which the jury isn't really seeing a lot of from these other players. And so I really do think that Nicole's essentially picking who she's going to the end with there. And if she's picking between the two, whether it's from a moral thing or whether she feels more threatened by Steffi, I think she prefers Rob. And I think that's another reason why she picked him. Now, in this case, they are going into the final four as a tight two. That might be invalidated as well. And maybe she'll still go. Maybe we'll see Darrell and Letitia come together. Or maybe even Rob says, you know what, Nicole's my biggest threat in the final three. I need to get rid of her, which would be a very interesting move that I'm sure we'll get into. But I feel like Nicole was essentially picking who she wants to go to the end with. I feel like she had sound reasoning. It was just the way that she ended up espousing that reasoning at tribal council that once again sat very, very poorly with a prospective member of the jury.
Yeah, I just think that objectively, we're going to talk about the jury. I just think Rob must be eons above everyone else and who you don't want to sit next to, surely. Like, yeah, would she win with Steffi and Letitia? I don't think so. I don't know if she wins with any combination with this jury, and largely that seems to be her fault. But Steffi, Letitia, and her just seems like a more even bet where maybe she could have kind of a say against Steffi, who's done similar things to her, but, you know, less, you know, impressive manipulative things than she has, and also has pissed some people off. Letitia, who people think has kind of like not done a lot. It just seems like a more even bet for her. And obviously that's now something she can't do because she's voted out Steffi. So, I mean, I guess it just comes down to the read of the jury, which I'm struggling to read as well. So that's really difficult. But she even said in confessional that yes, that Steffi's like the biggest game player and, you know, that's why she wanted to get rid of her. So there was definitely strategic stuff there. It really isn't all of the moralizing. In fact, I really think the moralizing is much like the idols in this episode, the pretty little thing that comes out the front, and that's what you think it is. But it's really the votes behind it and the agenda behind it that's really happening. But if she does think that Steffi and Rob are the two biggest threats, is there a world? Is Nicole the only person who can do this, who can say to Steffi, as the votes are being read, you turn on the amigos and that's why we're getting rid of you? Can Nicole turn on Rob next week? Is she the only person in the world who will do that? Or is that even too far for Nicole?
Oh my God.
Yeah. I think it's too far at this point. I think, like, Nicole's, but I think Nicole's whole brand is, I'm not a puppet, I'm a collaborator.
And, you know, her brand is loyalty,
you know? So yeah, it's one of the many things she has in common with David Wright. And I feel like, I feel like there's just the outcome where she gets to the final four vote and, like, Rob's not immune and she joins Letitia and Darrell in voting against Rob. I mean, even as I'm saying it, I guess you can see it. Right. Like, I think that eventually you can imagine the scenario where, like, she does just, like, legitimize that for herself in her mind.
Because now, like, yeah, Darrell is women's empowerment. Yeah. Don't you see how it goes?
Exactly.
You know what? Yeah. You know who's women's empowerment? Whoever is empowering Nicole at that time. I think that's what it is.
That's right. That's right. I think you're right.
Yeah. I mean, Nicole, I don't know if it was just this episode in particular. Maybe it's because there's so few people left and she was, to your point, Shannon, just such a focal point of the episode. But she... We talked before about how Rob has so much gravitas when he goes into confessionals, but I feel like Nicole's an underrated component of her confessionals as well, that almost feels like it's not realistic speech. And I say that actually in a good way, in that it is very dramatic. You know, you spoke before, Josh, about, like,
I will not waver. I'm there with you until the end because the world needs to see you shine.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. I think there's something very deliberate to the way Nicole speaks.
Pageantry,
everything
maybe?
Is very sharp. Everything is very intense. Every word is chosen carefully. And there is a very intense look in her eyes as she delivers these words. And she means everything she says. And the way that all of that like comes out is just like it hits you with the impact of like a laser guided missile. You're like, oh my God, she's just destroying me every single time. There is something almost like Terminator-esque about the way Nicole delivers her confessionals, the way that like she has like these very intense one-on-ones with certain people that makes her an exceptional character, but really makes me question like, are you like a real person or are you a character? Like, are you like, were you just created specifically for my television set? It's like, this is not how real people interact with each other. And it's so good. It's so, so great. Oh, it's so much fun to watch. She's an absolute legend.
And yeah. The fun thing about it, though, is that she's endeared herself to a lot of people through talking like that, which is so interesting. Like Meryl's words, soothsaying words at the merge were correct. She is one of the biggest social players even to this day, to the point where, you know, a lot of people thought, pretty much everyone but Darrow thought they had Nicole on their side going into this vote. And I think it's just somehow she's able to make people feel very calm if even from the outside it doesn't look that way. And I do have to say, I know we went back to it several times, but Rob is true woman empowerment. I understand the logic, but it has to be one of the most ironic Survivor quotes I have ever heard. And it just makes me really love Nicole again as a character, and some of all the things that she unintentionally comes across as. I told Josh this offline, but there has to be a Survivor fanfic out there somewhere of Angelina and Nicole playing together, because I feel like these two and Coach are probably the three biggest Survivor characters that definitely represent this characteristic.
Yeah, I mean, the Nicole Gold from this episode, I literally just have a list here of Nicole Gold. Maybe Nigold is what I should have gone with, but to the beginning of the episode, to tell Steffi and Letitia that she didn't tell them about the idol for their own good for some reason. I also love, just tangentially to that, that Steffi, who was like so idol obsessed this whole post-merge with all the Jacques stuff, is like the person who got like doomed by Advantage Geddon. So that's kind of like a funny little nugget. There's so many nuggets
in
this episode.
That's why she wanted Jacques to flush his idol.
Yeah, so this wouldn't happen.
She knew her fate was coming. She final destinationed herself.
Exactly. But look, last week we gave Rob credit for, as we said, pulling the Tony move and saying to Mike, like, you did this and that's why we're sending you home, so you can't be mad at us, right? And I guess Nicole did that this episode when she told Steffi that, you know, it's because she turned on the Amigos, but not like that, Nicole. Not while the votes are being read, and not when you were also a really, really pivotal and genuine cog in the plan to turn on the Amigos and to turn on Rob
so
until,
awesome.
Like, minute
so
40
great.
Of this episode. So it was just amazing, but her social game, as I said, the manipulation, I have to extremely credit it, but it's this really weird and unique social game where every single person that she seems to send to the jury, they specifically, you know, are mad at her and hate her for that. I mean, so many people in this merch, like, you know, Steffi going out and saying that, she's one of now so, so many, to the point where I now have to say that, like, Nicole's jury management is becoming, like, historically terrible. I don't even know if there's, you know, any other character who's had so many people go to the jury and just like blame them outright for the way that they feel.
Yeah, but I don't know. And maybe this is, you know, in a post-Tom Survivor essay world where I still hold out hope that anything can happen. I mean, if it's Nicole and Letitia and Darrow, we saw Tom completely shine up a turd in the final tribal council last season of someone who was abhorred by pretty much all of the jury, come in and try to credit his game. And unfortunately, due to the downfall of his final tribal council partner, he earned the vast majority of the votes. If Nicole is somehow able to get in there and using her odd way of saying things is able to justify her moves in a way that does impress the jury, considering who she's sitting against, I don't know. I feel like there is a glimmer, a small gleam in the eye of Nico Panaggio that makes me believe that Nicole might win this season. And if that's true, I mean, I know we said that like Darrow or Letitia might be the most Survivor essay ending ever, but I don't know. That might out Survivor essay that outcome.
I just don't think it's possible. I mean, every single juror has gone and like specifically really credited to her. Yeah, I don't see it. Just the jury management surely has to be beyond it. But look, she was doing some amazing stuff in this episode. I mean, Rob literally says he trusts her with his life. The way that she was giving him, you know, some information, but not all of the information, like, it was really impressive manipulative tactics. You know, that's obviously why everyone is so burnt by it. But I just don't think that it's a winning game when you're, you know, you need all these people to vote for you. It's a particularly bitter jury, and it's all heaped on her. And at some point, she has to take credit for that. It's not just one person who's mad at her. Like, they all have the same feeling in their exit interview before they talk to each other.
Is it all heaped on Nicole? There are moments where there are people who are viciously rolling their eyes at Rob. That's the thing that I'm looking
at. I think we're blanketing here. We're not talking about the jury. We're talking about the Jeffrey. I think
it's not
right
just
now with his reactions.
I mean, I think there was
this moment in this past tribal council where Rob is telling the story of Icarus. Is it Jeffrey who says this man thinks he's a god?
I thought it was Mike.
It's Mike who says that. That's not great, because I mean we're sitting here thinking that Mike is one of the more like rational, strategically minded jurors potentially, and he's the one who's there like being like disturbed and disgusted by the way that Rob is just like spewing what does sound very narcissistic. I mean, the strategic engine behind what Rob is saying, I get. That he's basically saying, you know, this cover story that's going to, blanket the truth of what he's actually doing here, that Steffi flew too close to the sun and it's not Jarrow. But it's not, to me, it's not that far away from the move at the final six of Survivor Ghost Island, where Dom like goes like really viciously against some of these people. And then like he goes like, this was a $1 million gamble. This idol isn't real. I had to like get really intense. This is my best move of the game. But the jury just doesn't get it because they're not seeing things the way that he's seeing things. Like the Icarus speech felt that way to me. And I feel like there's examples like that along the way, especially at tribal council, of the way that Rob and his amigos have presented themselves that have clearly landed so poorly with the jury. And yes, obviously, like Nicole is producing a lot of these eye rolling reactions as well. But I don't think that it should be undersold that Rob is doing that as well. And just because Rob is actively, obviously playing a very dominant game where he has been the driver behind a lot of these votes, and he will do this thing where he will like with the Mike vote, where he will then like pump the brakes and say, so Mike, now is the time for me to tell you that like I've known for a while, and I just want you to know that I've known. So like kind of like lay like a cushion down in front of Mike, so that when he stabs him in the heart, Mike will have a soft landing. You know what I mean? Like that doesn't mean that the jury is going to respect that. And I think that Rob has played an elegant game in a lot of ways, but he's also played a bulldozer game in many ways. And I think in a lot of ways that's in the jury management realm. And I think that I'm just being struck by such a like incensed jury. And I've come to believe that that's a part of the game that it's hard to account for, but it's not necessarily something you can blame. Survivor is an emotional game. And if you find yourself up against a bitter jury that is very bitter towards you, you did something wrong. And I think that we may get to a point where it's not even that Rob would lose this season because he gets eliminated at the final four due to this horrible twist of the vote nullifier, which we have not talked about yet, but it's atrocious and offensive to me. But even if he makes it to the final three, I don't think it's impossible that he loses to Letitia or Darrell. I think it would be very tough for him to lose to Nicole. But I don't think it would be impossible for him to lose to Letitia or Darrell, because people are just so offended at the way that the amigos themselves carried themselves.
It was less the Icarus stuff to me as more as it was him literally saying Darrell knows what he did.
Exactly. Which, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a little less decadent. That feels more like, I know that we took a lot of umbrage as well back during the whole Mother Jocker incident with Nicole being like, we do not condone swearing at our camp. It feels very parental, you know, and I think that's sort of maybe the way that he's unfortunately coming across. Now, this is a very interesting episode for Rob as well, because I mean, I feel like we had sort of poked some holes in maybe some of the decisions that he had made. I think a lot of it has sort of washed out. I mean, Shannon, now I'm not completely on your side. I think him getting out Rocco was a good move, considering that now he's won four individual immunities and might be looking at a fifth now. He doesn't really have much competition there, depending on what the challenge is. But I mean, we saw him be legitimately surprised for the first time, I think, in a while,
in this game by, you know, I think had he not won immunity, there might have been a chance that they actually got this plan off and got him blindsided. I don't know necessarily if he really would have gone home with the idol in his pocket, but the fact that he was so shocked and Nicole coming to him with this information about Steffi really means that I do not think he had any sense of intuition about what she was doing against him until that moment, which I thought was very, very surprising for a man who really had his hands in a lot of different jars this season.
Yeah, just a quick note on, you know, saying Doral knows what he did and talking about the Icarus thing, and the jury definitely didn't like it. There's definitely been, you know, the jury is bitter against him. I still think he's played such a dominant game. I mean, if he were to lose to Patricia or Doral or Nicole with the jury, I would definitely go down as calling the worst jury decision of all time. But when he's talking about the Icarus thing and what Doral did, it is subterfuge. He's not actually voting out Doral. So I think that once they realize that that was, you know, not actually how he felt, I mean, they were living for this blind side. So it's a little bit different because, I mean, yes, definitely if he's saying Doral knows what he did and then putting on his idol and putting Doral the sweet puppy down in this episode, you know, that looks worse. If he's calling Doral Icarus, that looks worse. But when it's Steffi, who the jury was cheering for her downfall anyway, I think it takes on a pretty different meaning. But yeah, let's talk about this idol plan, which was definitely one to ask the, you know, for Rob for the deep dive if he was really not going to be playing his idol. I mean, he didn't really have to think much about it, considering, of course, that he did win immunity. When we see him, you know, putting the plan to everyone, he is immune, so that explains kind of the ads. I don't know if he really knows. He didn't really have to make the decision. I don't think we can really know. I mean, that would have been crazy if it was something that he didn't want to do. And I think it speaks to the jury thing again. The fact that Rob did want to go in there and all put on their idols and not play them and just vote out Doral and just to show their dominance, like, the jury would have hated that. They would have hated that so much. Like, if you think that's a good play for the jury, which is why they were doing that, really, it would have been, like, the eye roll of the century. Steffi also wants to do that, you know, go in with all the idols and stuff. It's like, guys, the jury would not have been loving that. So I feel like they were saved from that with this blind side, which the jury actually really did enjoy.
Yeah, that's very true. So I guess, Josh, you know, you talked about the jury component of the Rob stuff. Did you have any thoughts about, I guess, the plan that was coming together against him and subsequently him finding out, you know, at the 11th hour and organizing this coup against Steffi at the last minute?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's been a big theme of the season, right? It's like anytime somebody has started embarking on a plan to take out Rob, the word gets back to him, whether it's because Mike is wrongfully entrusting Doral or because Nicole is now going to be a turncoat on Steffi. And it just sort of feels like this has just been the momentum of the season. I'm trying to think, like, so the way that the votes shook out, help me with this a little bit. So it's going to be Nicole and Doral vote for Steffi, right? Mm-hmm. Rob's going to vote for Letitia. Mm-hmm. Steffi is voting for Doral and Letitia's voting for Doral. Mm-hmm.
Correct. So it was a 2-2-1, but the second two and the one got nullified.
Right. Right. So because Shannon, you had said, like, you were trying to figure out why Rob voted for Letitia. And so I wonder if, like, maybe we can try and figure that out here, because I think for me, I think I could see a version of it that makes some sense, where if he's been presented with this really earth shattering intelligence that Steffi has been plotting a coup against Rob for all of this time, which is earth-shattering news for Rob and a huge surprise to Rob. And if this is true, then Steffi really needs to go. Then for him, then the move becomes, okay, well, Nicole, to trust that what you're telling me is the truth, we need to convince Doral to vote for Steffi, which he'll probably do anyway, and you have to vote for Steffi. And I'm going to be playing my idol on Doral, so I know that Doral is going home no matter, is going to be safe no matter what. But if you're pulling some sort of maneuver on me, I've got this vote on Letitia that sends her down the river, and I don't have Steffi's blood directly on my hands in case you're lying to me, so that I can eventually tell Steffi, like, they tried to hoodwink me on you if it wasn't true. Is there something, like, I know there's a lot of garbled language here, but, like, is there something like that that you think might be going on with why he votes for Letitia in that spot?
I'll go with Occam's razor here. I think it's that he was afraid that Letitia might see what's going on in the moment and play the idol on Steffi.
But then he doesn't need to vote for her, because then she's been advantage getting out of the game. Like, there's only one person who's not going to be immune. This is this tribal council.
Right, but yeah, but I don't know if they necessarily realize that, you know?
How can they not? Like, it's Dante math. Like, there's four idols, there's five people.
They've been playing for 37 days, Shannon. The mind is eating itself at this point, even though they just chow down on some hot dogs and maybe some giant bats.
Gross.
Oh, my God.
Gross,
can we talk about Bat Island? Bat Island
so
is
gross.
The worst reward, firstly. It's also, like, definitely what Island of Secrets should have been. I mean, I would not have been going to giant Bat Island. Bats are flying rats. That's a terrible reward. It reminded me one time my fiance and I went on a date, lovely date, to open air cinema. And during the movie, there was this mass bat migration. Like, I was getting PTSD because there was one bat that flew over. I was like, oh, that's gross. Then a few, and then like the sky went dark and there were like hundreds of bats. And we've not gone to open air cinema since, because that's when I realized that my favorite thing about movies is that they're indoors. So I would not have been going to Bat Island. I mean, that's a terrible reward.
You're not going to bat for Bat Island. No, is what you're saying.
Do you remember what the movie was? Was it Batman Begins? Because that would maybe it was just atmospheric.
No, it was August Osage County. That's like the most. That's the thing I remember most about that movie.
It's August Osage County.
Yeah, and there was a bat migration in the middle of the movie.
Specific.
I just imagine watching like Meryl Streep and Julia Roberts go toe-to-toe and then just a flurry of bats explode above you.
I don't think you understand like how bad this day was. My poor fiance, you know, took me out to this lovely date. We got the picnic blanket and everything, and then mass bat migration. I hate bats. They are flying rats. If you went to Rat Island, would people have been enthused about that? Nick was like, great job, we're gonna go on reward and there's gonna be tons of rats. No one would have gone on that reward.
I don't know, maybe it's because bats are so inaccessible and far away. It was weird to see them out during the day. Like, I thought they were going to stay overnight, and that's when they see the bats. But no, they were just, like, starkly flying around. Maybe they were, like, seagulls of Samoa, and they were trying to, like, circle and eat those hot dogs. But, it was a weird reward. Also, Monono
It just made me think of Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, the second one where the guano, and I was looking at all of those toppings on the hot dogs. I was like, okay, is that like a guano aioli that's on that hot dog? Like, I would be very, very afraid to eat anything on Bat Frickin' Island. Not that, James Clement wouldn't mind. He would turn it into soup.
Yeah. I just thought it was super interesting, though, because Nicole called this like a prehistoric encounter, and we already had Jurassic Park beforehand. So I don't know. I know we're making more Jurassic Park movies. Has Samoa just like really... Very surreptitiously submitted itself to like, hey, Hollywood, film here. We look like we're just straight out of 10,000 BC. You know, we have giant bats for your next film, Chris Pratt.
Okay, I hated Bat Island, and I can't remember anything else now about the episode or what I meant to say about it, except for the fact that the bats gave me PTSD to the worst date of all time.
Well, I guess I feel like we've been sitting on the vote nullifier too much, and Josh has become rather steppy-like.
Enjoying it.
It's just horrible. It's such an awful idea. It enrages me, obviously. I mean, granted, I think it may lead us to what I think that this season will be a better season if Rob loses.
What?
And
that's saying, Josh?
I absolutely think so. I think this season will be a much better season if Rob loses. I think the story of the season will be a lot better if Rob loses. So I think that this is potentially going to lead us there. So how mad can I be at it if the story outcome I'm rooting for is a loss for The Godfather? But it's such an awful thing to introduce so close to the end. It completely, totally, absolutely devastates somebody's game in a very unfair way. Idols are not playable at the final four. Why should any advantage like this be playable at the final four when this is a nail in the coffin type of advantage? This is like the golden gun in GoldenEye. Like one shot from this thing and you're dead. You could be shot.
Is Rob Odd Job right now?
Yes, you could be shot in the toe and you're dead. It's over for you. It is such a garbage twist, and I'm furious about it. I think it is one of the most ill-conceived twists in Survivor history, as far as I'm concerned. And I think it guarantees that Letitia and Doral will be in the final three. And it's just a matter of who gets destroyed by this, Rob or Nicole. I don't know. Talk me through if you have any kind of rose-colored view into this advantage. I'd love to hear it because I do not see it at all.
Okay, well, I mean, I disagree with so much of that. So where to get into? I think Rob will win, so we'll get into that. I want Rob to win. It was the other thing about disagreeing with it, and I think the story would be best. But we'll get into the jury stuff. In terms of the advantage, I don't like it. So I agree with that part. I don't like anything this close to the end. I don't want them to be idols at Final Five. You know, I want a pure game for a couple of rounds. I think that, you know, I've had my problems with the idol nullifier in that it like protects the majority, but with three idols in the game and advantage get and looming, kind of made sense that they should have just given her an idol nullifier just to use for this vote. I feel like that's kind of the simple thing. They do want to obviously give something on the Island of Secrets, but I do find it kind of funny and ironic that Survivor South Africa is like going out of their way to prevent fire making when US Survivor has made it like we have to have fire making. I didn't like the advantage at all. But what I did love and what I continue to love is that I think that Island of Secrets is now like cemented itself as like the best long-term mechanism, you know, of any of these islands or anything, because I truly believe it flipped the game here. I mean, Nicole has a confessional about Letitia's Island of Secrets lie and her being, you know, correctly really suspicious of the lie, and it flipped the game again. And that's just good television, that a mechanism can really just like encourage bad gameplay like that from Letitia and then flip the whole game. I mean, Letitia, I really want to talk about this because I thought it was so bad. Should we play Name That Lie? Of what Letitia should have said instead of saying that she got nothing on the Island of Secrets, which is not a thing that happened. Not a thing that happens on the Island of Secrets.
I got to the Island of Secrets in Boston. Rob and Sandra were there. They build giant heads. I don't know who they are. They introduced themselves to me. They were giving me, I felt like they were reading me my funeral rites. I mean, my big thing that I feel like A, Letitia could have said, and B, could have been a good substitute for the vote nullifier, if they had said, this is the puzzle in the next immunity challenge, you have the night to practice it, I feel like that's just a nice blanket thing. It's an advantage, but it's only an advantage for the next challenge. Letitia could have very easily said that as well, considering that she only just got to the puzzle as Rob was finishing it. So it's not like, you know, oh, it's an advantage. And I couldn't really use it. You know, I couldn't really even win immunity for myself. I think it's a really easy get out of jail free card and something that could justifiably be in for what I'm assuming is the final trip to iOS.
Yeah, I love that. That's great as well. Here's my Island of Secrets lie. It's easy because it's mostly the truth, which often the best lies are. They're like 90% the truth. The lie is you got a vote nullifier that's valued till the final five. Not the final, because final four was crazy, as Josh is ranting. That was unbelievable in and of itself. You can even describe it. You can say everything that's true about the vote nullifier. You can show it to them and just say, until final five, which I think people will believe because we've never seen advantages go beyond final five before. And then once you've got through that and didn't play it, you're at the final four with the vote nullifier, with Steffi, with all the power anyway. So just say, you know, I'm going to play it on Drew. It's so simple. It's like just the truth, but it's like tiny, but not the truth. Like it really felt like she put no effort into the lie at all. And I mean, to Steffi's credit, like Steffi did not doom her game here. For me, like it really was Letitia's lie that got Steffi like completely voted out here, because it was such a bad, no one has worked out Island of Secrets yet. We're 17 weeks into it and the lies continue to be terrible, and it's one of my favorite subplots of the season.
So that's a great suggestion, by the way, Shannon. That's exactly what she should have done.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. Is this the first vote nullifier we've seen? Because we've seen extra votes. We've seen steal a vote, but I don't think we've ever seen someone say, hold up, you're not going to vote tonight.
Doesn't come to mind that we've seen it quite like that. We've seen a vote get stolen. We've seen a vote get added. I don't think that we've seen a vote just outright be like canceled by another human being. We've seen people lose their votes before, but we haven't seen somebody be like, I choose for Mike Bloom's vote to not even be in existence. And to keep him grounded here while we all go and vote. I think that this is a first. I don't hate it out of hand. I don't hate the idea of a vote nullifier out of hand. I think the vote nullifier is not a terrible advantage given where we are in the legacy of Survivor and the types of advantages that exist in the lifespan of the franchise. I hate it at the final four, I think is...
What do you hate more, that or Creepy Bat Island?
I would rather Creepy Bat Island be like the premise of a season of Survivor than there be a vote nullifier.
What about if it's the premise of a season, like you're going out to Fiji to cover and you have to, you know, instead of going out to Ghost Island, you have to then live with the bats?
The first ever season in Fiji was pretty much Snake Island with Exile Island, right? So it's not exactly out of the question.
I think some of the jurors would say this season is Snake Island.
Part of it is the adventure. So like if Bad Island is available to you and you have an opportunity to go to Bad Island and you're going out all the way to do survivory things anyway, you go to Bad Island.
I wouldn't.
That's not a problem.
I hate that.
It'd be terrifying. It would be awful. It would be terrible, terrible, terrible. But you go. And it's certainly much more preferable to me than having a vote nullifier in the final four of a season of Survivor. Because I think it's just it's so crappy. I don't like the fire twist in American Survivor. I think that that's a garbage twist as well. And I think that one of the things I hate about that is like the monotony of it. And now we're just like getting like you get to that point. And it's like, OK, let's just watch two people make fire again. That's so fun. But I think that the final crucible to any season of Survivor should be the social strategic component. And this, I feel like this really robs people of some agency at the final vote in a way that I think is really unfortunate. I think it's awful. I don't know how many different ways I could say I think it's awful.
No, I'm not a fan, and I'm hopeful that it doesn't make too much of an impact. I mean, I guess like the best case scenario is what? It becomes a 3-1 vote against Letitia, and Letitia just turns it into a 2-1 vote because I would not want this to prominently affect, just like in Triple H.
That's the only way that it cannot have an impact. Because she's either preventing fire or, she's actually voting someone
else. Unless they pull a Survivor New Zealand and do a 2-1-1 at the final four, which I would not put past Rob being able to concoct. But it's Survivor South Africa. It could happen. But what I will say, though, is as much as Letitia bungled lying about it, I thought her and Steffi actually had it. You know, again, hadn't they just gone ahead with voting out Darrow, they actually had a pretty solid plan for the final four. And again, that gives, you know, Nicole credit for being able to prevent possibly going out in fourth and instead probably guaranteeing her a spot in the final three. But the Steffi and Letitia relationship is also super interesting because I feel like much like a lot of what Letitia's been doing, it came out of nowhere. And to see the two of them commiserate so much, I'm really interested to hear from Rob and Nicole after the fact about like, did they get a sense that Steffi was on the outs as much as obviously we did? Again, maybe that's why I was so shocked that Rob was so surprised that Steffi was plotting against him, because I mean, it seems like she's making other bonds with people like Letitia. And it was super interesting to have the two of them essentially agree to go to the final three together, because I never would have expected that considering their positions even a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. And looking at it from Rob's perspective, you know, he gets information from Nicole, two people he trusted. He trusted Letitia as well, and Steffi have turned on him, and he chooses to take out Steffi, I guess, you know, assuming that Letitia would play her idol. But Steffi is his primary target regardless. Like, do you feel like, because Letitia has the advantage next time, do you feel like Letitia should have been the primary target, or you feel like it was irrelevant because he assumed she'd be immune anyway?
Yeah, and he didn't know that she had the advantage.
Well, he knows she was on Island of Secrets with a sketchy, terrible, didn't happen lie. There's something there.
Yeah, I mean, I would also say that I think Steffi stands a much better chance of beating him at the final four in a challenge than Letitia. And I think even though, again, he was shocked to see Steffi plotting against him, I think he's very aware of how much the noose is probably tightest around his neck at the final four. He says in the beginning of this episode that, like, I usually have a big sense as to what's going on, and for the first time in the game, I don't. And that freaks me out. So I think that Steffi was the right move here. It does also hammer home his point, as Nicole so delicately put in the tribal council, of like, my plan was to go to the end with Amigos. You said you didn't want that me included in that plan, so I had to get rid of you. It was a similar logic that he attributed to the CPAY vote. I mean, that exchange was so interesting because, you know, you betrayed the Amigos with what? You tried to blindside me. I give Steffi a lot of credit this episode, but like, you know full and well what you did. Like, I don't know if she legitimately was like, I'm confused, where is this coming from? Or if she was just trying to play something up. But I thought the move for him to get rid of Steffi was good, considering that that's one guaranteed person who's not going to take him to the finals. And now Darrow feels even more indebted to him because, you know, Darrow does this last minute pitch to him of like,
listen, you know, you say that you saved me a bunch of times. Hopefully you can save me. And even though Nicole's the one to ultimately play the idol on him because he's a courageous, secure man, it definitely seems like, you know, Rob's big intention. And there's this super badass moment before they go to tribal council. Rob just goes up to drown the water and says, I'll ask you one thing, my brother. You know how you joke about always writing Steffi's name down? Do it one more time.
Oh, I love
and that. Then he just walks away. Like, and also it's good because, you know, now that Darrow has gotten the reputation of being loose-lipped, he really doesn't want Darrow squealing that information. He just wants to say, trust the process, vote for Steffi one more time. In true Darrow fashion, he does, and Rob's able to execute this plan. So I thought it was a smart choice. We'll see how much the flashy dramatics of it all will play to the jury. We haven't gotten Steffi's Ponderosa yet, so I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
I would also say all of those reasons I agree with for why Steffi was the correct person for Rob to be, making sure goes home this round over Letitia. And even knowing that Letitia went to the Island of Secrets and came back with a really sketchy lie, and even assuming that there may be more to the story than meets the eye there, is there any universe where he thinks she has a boat nullifier for the final four?
He pressed about the Joshicon.
Is there any world in which he thinks that that's even remotely possible? Because it's so unfair. It's horrible. So other than that, I think that, you know, he's definitely made the right.
Okay, so this is going to lead into my next question, which is he would never think that she could have this, and if she does use it to take him out, that will feel unfair at the final freaking four to have this advantage. Will we look back that him sending Letitia to the Island of Secrets was like his worst mistake in the game? Because he trusted her at that point. He wrongly trusted her. He sent her there. He wanted to rebond with Nicole. I totally feel that stuff. He wanted to go to the bats. I mean, I think the bats, maybe they were trying to tell him, don't take the reward. Maybe you should be going to Island of Secrets yourself. Like, is that not the move at the final five to be like, Nicole, you deserve a day out. Go be with the terrible bats. And, you know, Letitia, you're dying soon, so you go be with the bats, and I will send myself to Island of Secrets. Like, I know he needs the food, possibly for immunity, but, like, there's going to be something there. Don't you want to control the final advantage in the game? I think there's a move.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he thinks he is controlling the final advantage of the game, I think. I think, for one, like, he can't assume that there's, or he doesn't assume that there's going to be something quite as powerful as what Letitia is going to be getting.
Well, that's wrong to assume.
You know, I guess at this point now, that's the lesson here is, like, don't put it past the survivor gods of whatever, you know, franchise, whatever nation these survivor gods are presiding over. Do not put it past them to put something so unfathomably powerful in the final round. Do not underestimate their ability to do something quite this ridiculous. So that's lesson number one for future people to take note of as they're going to play the game. But I think it's so in that level, it's like it's him underestimating the game to some degree. I think it's also maybe overestimating his own power in the game. And I think it's underestimating Letitia to a large degree of both thinking that, like, Letitia has gotten, like, listen, Letitia's on her deathbed and I allowed her to see her family members here. Like, so she's got to be very indebted to me. I think that he feels like she's very indebted to him at this point and is loyal to him and maybe doesn't even have the game savvy that if she were to find something would do anything to really destabilize him. I think that he's really underestimated her by sending her there. And in his mind, Darrow is a slam dunk. We got to send Darrow home.
Are the wrong reads, so that's why it would be, I think, like, such a, like, that's what the move we'd look at. If this does happen to him at the final four, while it would be extremely unfair, the YX lost of it would be he shouldn't have sent her to Island of Secrets. Like, it was based on his trust for her, and it was the wrong trust.
Yeah,
absolutely. I do love the irony, though, that, again, last episode was, we don't know how much longer she's going to have, and then next episode, she'll be fine on the Island of Secrets. She doesn't need to make a fire. It's sunny outside. She'll be okay. She'll be okay.
He's come to lean on her with the same, like, expecting the same loyalty from her that he's expected from Steffi and Nicole at this point, and Darrow at points throughout the game. And so I think it's not just that it's an underestimation of Letitia, but I think it's an overestimation of himself and an overestimation of his own space within the game. And that's that is why. And Shannon, let me be clear that I think that Rob has played the best game of everybody here, that if he were to win, I think he would be a remarkable winner. I'm not saying that those things are not true, but I think that he is definitely fallible. I think that he has displayed weaknesses in ways that are maybe a little bit more slippery to grab onto than some when you're doing like these autopsies on how people lost or what their games were about. I think that the weaknesses for Rob are almost more existential and a little bit harder to absolutely pin down and define. And I think that that's a credit to the way that he plays. I think he's a really, really good Survivor player in many, many, many respects. But I think that but for me, and this has been an evolution in me as a Survivor consumer, is that I am starting to care a little bit less about the best player has to win. And I care more about what is the best story for a season of Survivor. And I think that there is a fascinating, compelling story to be told in Rob becoming Icarus and Rob flying so close to the sun and thinking he's got this thing and thinking he's got this thing to such a degree that he's calling other people Icaruses and not realizing that it's his wings that are about.
We're
to
all Icarus, I think, is what it is.
Boy, and, we'll see if the Icarob prediction is coming true.
But I think that there's something very, very compelling to that. And I think it would be embodied by this fatal underestimation of Letitia here. So happy to get into that more.
Well, okay, let's get into what I disagree with you about that, because I definitely see that, and I think there's so much beauty sometimes in the loss. The beautiful loss is something you've spoken about from The Genius, something that happens on Survivor for sure, but I don't see the beauty in that for Rob's story yet, even with all the poetic Icarus analogies. I mean, like, I see it obviously like with David Ride and with Malcolm, some of my favorite players that have fallen just short, even with Verna last season, that was the beautiful loss, and then, you know, Tom was the wacky, crazy win that I think we said the season ended up deserving. But for me, this really has been Rob's story. It hasn't been some wild, crazy story. Like, if it's last season, Doral needs to win. Of course Doral needs to win, but not this season. I don't see it being Doral's story. I don't see how anyone else in the final four for me would be a satisfying winner. So from a story perspective, I think, you know, it needs to be Rob for me. I still saw some people, you know, online saying this was a really frustrating episode for them because Nicole did go back to Rob, as people always do. For me, it was satisfying because I said a couple of weeks ago, what I'm looking for is for Rob to win and for it to be difficult, which it was. They were turning on him and he like flipped the game in this episode with obviously, you know, with Nicole's aid as a collaborator. And that's the story I want. I want to see how he gets past his main opposition at this point, having a vote nullifier at the final four. If he can get through that and get through a very angry jury, that for me would be the most satisfying win of all, because then he would have navigated definitely a flawed game. I think a great, excellent, brilliant game. No one's perfect. I think he's come quite close, but of course he's made his mistakes. But for me, for him to navigate what is a difficult final part of the game, that's the story I want to see. I don't want to, like, I love Doral, but this isn't Doral's story, I don't think. And I don't think it's Letitia's story.
But I think that the arc that would make a lot of sense to me for this season, with Rob getting so close, but just not close enough, like not quite there, is this idea that, you know, Saula, I'm botching that, right?
Saula. You're close.
Saula. So I was close. Turquoise is what I was going to say. the teal tribe, Saula, that, you know, that I know I was watching it rather quickly, but the, you know, the early on, like, the idea was like, Saula was in such trouble. Nathan's foot was busted. They were losing challenges. They were going through despair together. They had no idea how they were going to be able to get themselves out of this jam. And those trials by fire forged a closeness to the point that they become the amigos. They become friends. You know, they're essentially family. The level of loyalty that is displayed amongst these people early on in the season is unlike almost anything we've seen in Survivor before, because we've seen tribes get decimated and then become close, but it's almost like close out of necessity, like a foe, a foe, a four. This is like close, like we're a fraternity, we're a family order. You know, we've gone through something that no one else will ever be able to understand. And then they drive that train so deep into the season and make some, you know, questionable loyalty choices internally along the way in the Nathan vote, the CPAY vote. But they have this energy behind them because they remember what it was like when they were the ants under the magnifying glass. They remember what it was like when they were the underdogs of the season. In their mind, that's still who they are. But that story evolves. That is not who they become. They become a dominating driving force. David does become Goliath in the form of these three people who have grouped together to become this gigantic, powerful force of strategic mastery over the entire season, to the point that they are embittering the entire jury along the way. And no one has seemingly any real respect or appreciation for what they perceive to be their own underdog story. So you say that there's nobody who has a story to win that would match like the triumph of a Rob win. And I agree that I don't think that there has been a lot invested in Letitia and Darrow as like, sure. Because you love him because he's great. And like, he's, it's a lot of like show don't tell. It's not a lot of like deep dive into backstory with these people the way that you might expect for, you know, people who could be like possible winner candidates, or even like somebody like Tom, who seemed like he had a lot more of like an emotional story, even though it was ridiculously Homer Simpson-esque, as I know, Mike, you've described him before. I do think still there is a story about, there's a version of this story of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets, where it is still the story of Rob. It is the story of Saula. It is the story of Rob as the foremost poster child of Saula. And it is not the story of that being a victory. It is a story of how an underdog, it's a lot like Breaking Bad. It's like the story of how like a mild mannered chemistry teacher becomes a horribly ruthless drug kingpin and falls. And I think that you can map that onto a story like this where Rob loses. And for me, from a story level, I do find that more satisfying. I think if Rob just plays an extremely dominant game and he wins the season, then like tip of the wombat visor to him. And I'm sure we'll talk about wombat visor. Yeah. So, you know, tip of the wombat visor to him and well earned, sir. Absolutely. But I will absolutely forget about this season. I won't remember it. I will group it in that category of seasons that just had like an illustrious dominant winner. And it was a rather, who was going to stop him and just move on and just never think about it again. But I would think about the season where that person got so close and because of his own foibles and certain areas where he mismanaged things were to lose, especially if he were to get to the final tribal council and lose against Letitia and Darrow.
I can't even with that.
I think it would be fascinating. I think it would be a fascinating cautionary tale of this social experiment that is Survivor. And I think it would be a better ending for the season personally.
So a few things on this. First, I'm all in on the Robinberg Heisenberg comparison, especially if he goes to the end and he's like, I did all this because I like to do it. It wasn't even for Soul. I did it for me. But I totally see where we're both of you are coming from on this. As much as I really talked up the Survivor essay editing, I feel like something that might muddy the waters for a non-Rob win is just the fact that he's been so damn prevalent. We're talking triple digit.
I do have to say, just to quickly interrupt, I do disagree with you about the Survivor essay editing. And I know that I watch things on double speed, but I did feel like one of like the tricks of the season would be you would enter an episode and somebody would say like, so this is how this cycle is going to go. And then it's like, okay, so you're going to get voted out at the end of this episode. And that happened so often in the early going of this season. And I think that even as we're getting into this final four episode, there's one person with a really, really prominent story. And I think that one person has that really, really prominent story to either win or to lose. And if it's to lose, the three people, with the exception of maybe Nicole, who would then be the person to win in that person's stead, would be having like a Shaggy Dog victory, where it's less about them as a character winning and more about Rob as the supposed king losing. So I don't agree with you about the elegance of the editing on Survivor South Africa. I think that that's a failing of the editing.
You think, but I would say, yeah, that might be one thing, but would you rather hear that or would you rather have some information, you know, deliberately edited out and a story manipulated to have you say what the fuck at the outcome, you know, which I feel like we have gotten, on some other Survivor episodes.
Well, I think we've gotten some of that this season. I remember I got through the Paul vote in the second episode of this season and I texted you, Mike. I was like, excuse me? why did Paul get voted
out?
Well,
that did happen to Tribal. Like, there's nothing they could do.
You know, I don't think that they gave you any information for that. I think that there's a few examples of that along the way.
But I would say the good massively outweighs the bad. Like Shannon said with Rob's game, I don't think any editing style is perfect, but I would much rather get a deep dive into who these people are, warts and all, than just a very base perspective of this is this person as a player, this is this person as a character, and we're going to see those beats over and over and over again.
Sure, I agree with that. I just don't agree that I think that this iteration of the Survivor, of the greater Survivor franchise, necessarily does that leaps and bounds better than the other ones. And just to pigeon it to international Survivor, I think Australian Survivor does this better.
Interesting. I mean, well, there might be a time in a couple of weeks where we might have to revisit this point. But yeah, Josh, I think you brought up exactly what I was going to talk about. The fact that he is so out in front, and Survivor has done this before. There are a handful of seasons, especially in the American version, that are less so why blank won, more so why this person lost. Samoa is by far the biggest example, but you look at Guatemala, you might even look at something like South Pacific. And I think that while it's a really cool storytelling style, the other edge of that sword is that you get massive pushback from your fandom as to, I don't understand why this person didn't win. You know, we saw all their game, you know, it feels like they were the quote unquote the only one playing, even if that isn't true. So while I think it would certainly be interesting if Rob did not win, that's why I said at the very beginning of the podcast that I would fear for the show, because I think that the unfortunate externality of that is a lot of people are going to be pissed up. Okay, if Rob didn't win, why did we get his story the entire time?
Yeah.
You know, and it's unconventional, and unconventional storytelling is cool because you don't want to end up in the same ruts every time as you're bringing up, Josh. But unfortunately, that's a fallacy in this form of unconventional storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, I think it's very likely that Rob's just going to win this thing. And that's just how it's going to go. I think it's not my preference, because I like unconventional storytelling. And I think that the unconventional route this season makes a lot more coherent sense to me as like a long arc of the season of the show.
When the U.S. introduced fire making, a lot of the problem, as I've said, was that we were like, okay, U.S. Survivor, you're scared of your best player. I mean, what is that? But your most dominant player not winning Survivor, which is stupid, because even if no one even wants the most dominant player. No one even wants their favorite, I would say, to win every single time. We want those beautiful losses. We want the David Rice and the Malcolms and the things that break your heart to think about it, you know, a long time later. But I also think by the same token, it's like you also can't hope for the beautiful loss every time. Like, sometimes the story is just like, wow, what an incredible winning game that we saw every single part of. How masterful. Like, you say that you wouldn't remember the season. I mean, I've seen a lot of beautiful losses. You wouldn't remember One World. The only thing you remember One, like, we try not to, but the only thing you remember One World for is Kim's incredible game. And I think that's what the season
I remember how much Leaf was excited for his barbecue reward. So don't put words in my mouth. I remember that.
And ironically enough,
well,
the men's tribe on that season was named Monono. So maybe they went to Bad Island without even realizing it.
Yes. Oh my God. Who knew?
Well, that's why that season didn't work, maybe, because they were just so traumatized from the bats. But look, you know, I think sometimes, as much as I am happy to be heartbroken by the show, I'm also sometimes in it to get, I just want variety. I'm also in it to sometimes see the dominant player win, and that's what makes the losses have weight, because sometimes they do win, but, you know, sometimes they don't win. I do think for Rob, it's not just that, like, yes, his story of him losing wouldn't be satisfying for me, because I don't think there's a equally satisfying counterpart of a winner. And then when you look at the other seasons where that dominant player has lost, and it's been much more Russell's losing story than Natalie White, for example, at least I understand why he lost. But if Rob comes out and loses next week, especially with a jury, I don't think I'll be able to really be like, wow, these are, you know, besides like sending Letitia to Island of Secrets, if that's how it goes, or the jury just being super bitter, if that's how it goes, I don't think I'll be able to come out here and be like,
yeah,
oh, well, here's all the things that Rob did wrong. Like, with Russell, it was like, okay, what a story. What a lesson we've all learned. Everyone except Russell learned the lesson of, like, don't be a dick to people, and then you won't, you know, then you won't lose Survivor. And it took Russell, I mean, Russell still hasn't learned it. I know that because he came on Australian Survivor, but, like, that was the lesson. And I don't know what Rob's lesson is. I said this on the Australian Survivor finale last year. I don't think juries are immune from criticism in their votes. And if Rob loses, as I've said, I think it'll be the worst jury decision of all time. And we'll have to come out and say, okay, A, what did Rob do wrong? Because some of it will be on him. But B, where is it true bitterness? And I think there really is a difference between like, okay, I didn't like you in the game, so I'm not going to vote for you. That's your prerogative. Or I did like you in the game, but you crossed a really personal line for me that makes it impossible for me to vote for you. And I think a lot of that is the extremely personal way that Nicole has played the game. And I think that if and when we talk about her being a losing finalist next week, we'll have just a catalog of examples, probably for every juror, of where I think she crossed the line, again, not in a moral sense, in a game sense, of having a bad jury play. But for Rob, there would be very, very few examples for me where he crossed the line other than just being the best, for why juries aren't voting for him. And I think that I won't feel like that's satisfying, because it's not like, wow, you know, you made all these mistakes and you lost, you know, that's satisfying. Or, oh, you flew too close to the sun and then you lost at the end. Especially because if that happens, it will probably be largely because of this advantage that you hate so much, Josh. So, like, how satisfying could that be when it's based on this thing we all really don't like? And that could be his undoing. In saying that, I do think he's completely my winner pick. I definitely still think he's going to win. But if he does lose, I just think there's not enough there for me to be like, oh, I get this from a story perspective. I think it'll be confusing from a story perspective in an edit that has not confused me that much this season.
Yeah. I would just say I do see flaws in Rob's game, that if he were to stand in front of a jury, I could understand reasons why they wouldn't be thrilled with him.
Compared to Durrell and Letitia, like, really? Like, yeah, if he's standing
up
to another.
Yeah,
really?
Potentially. What? Potentially people are just like, Durrell, I can't believe you made it. And like, if people just like love Durrell the way that Mike Bloom loves Durrell, you know, like,
yeah, we're in a better place.
You know, if there's just if that's a reason to vote for somebody to win Survivor. And we've
but
seen
they liked Rob too
recently. Not everybody seems to me,
because he's been so dominant. It's not a personal thing.
It's not a personal thing necessarily, but there is something personal about the presentation of some of this stuff and like the tribal council theatrics. And it's not quite as pointed for him as it is for Nicole necessarily. But I think that there does seem to be enough people who are like this God complex on this guy. And especially if like Rob gets there with Letitia and Durrell and Nicole is on the jury, and you know, Nicole is just like really going to be beating the drum for Rob. Are they going to want to be part of Rob's zombies? You know, like, are they going to want to join the cult and vote for him? So I think that we're just
going to
end up
circling. That's what I won't find satisfying.
I understand that some people don't. And for me, I don't always either. But for me in this situation, I think it would be fascinating. And I think that there would be things to pick apart. But it's your podcast and you two will have to be the ones who pick it apart.
I don't want to
you're giving us the bomb and you're like, OK, have fun with that.
Well, I'm just laying out what I think about it while you have me here, and why I would be fine with it in the way that I would be fine with it. But I think for me to enumerate the points any further, I think we would just be circling the drain.
So can I actually, on that note, bring up a question that I'd be very intrigued to hear from you guys, because we've been hearing, I'd say for like 15 episodes at this point, like, what has Letitia done? Even in Mike's jury, you know, Ponderosa, they're like, all Letitia did was sit around. Mike said he wouldn't vote for her. Letitia has found and played an idol. Letitia, next round, is going to play an advantage, one that could possibly get rid of a player like Rob or Nicole. Does that give Letitia some ammunition to possibly get a win here? Is totally. That enough to buck the convention, that the reputation that she's been given, to be like, oh, I thought you were just an old woman who didn't do anything and was waiting for sweet death to encapsulate her. But no, you got off your butt and you did stuff. I mean, Tom, we argued that like he really made a turn at the final five last season when he, you know, helped Werner get rid of Katinka and then helped Jean get rid of Werner and then had a speech at the end that at least was better than John's to get the majority of the votes. Could something similar happen to Letitia?
Yeah, I mean, well, to say what I think is going to happen, or maybe I do think Rob wins at a jury. I think Rob likely wins that final challenge. He's kicked into another gear. He's won all the recent challenges. And he also did do exactly what I kind of said I wanted him to do last week, which is to realize that Steffi is the Katinka who's turning on him, to get that information from Nicole, the Tom. I mean, it was amazing how it was playing out, and to do everything in his power to get Steffi out of the game. I have deja vu because I came off of that podcast at the Final Five last year and was like, Verna's gonna win. There's no way that he can't win. And then they all turned on him. But I really do think that even with Letitia's, you know, vote nullifier, her amazing vote nullifier that Josh loves, I do think that now Nicole and him really are like cemented. She did, you know, really make a whole song and dance about turning on the Amigos. Surely not even Nicole can turn on that. And he's really reaffirmed that connection with Darrow, who I don't think has Jean's killer instinct. So I still think that there's a way, a high likelihood that even if Rob doesn't win immunity, that those three are just voting out Letitia. But if that doesn't happen, and if Rob does go at the final four, this is now I would say Letitia would become my winner pick, because if he does go out the final four, she'd have played her advantage and she could really take pretty much all the credit. Even if they all vote him out, I think for her to stand up and play an advantage, especially if Nicole stays with him and her and Darrow come together and use the advantage in an actually impactful way, I think she would be credited with that. She did obviously play an idol here that she didn't need, but she had an idol, and that's surprising. If it's Nicole, Darrow, and Letitia, I definitely would put my money on Letitia, but I still do think that if Rob's in the picture, that he is winning.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree with all of that. And I think like then like the argument in that realm of a Letitia win after freaking vote nullifying Rob at the, final four, which is crazy to me, would be not unsimilar to Chris Underwood winning the Edge of Extinction in the finale, right?
Oh, is Chris Underwood also close to death?
Yes, Chris. I hope not.
Well, listen, he spent a lot of time on Extinction there with very little surprise, so I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, we know that Letitia's on the Edge of Extinction at least. So, but with Letitia here, like with her like coming out and like TKOing Rob here with the vote nullifier, and then getting to the final three and being like, I killed Rob. He wanted to save me from death, and it is I who killed him.
I'm so mad at me and Mike and Verna for not making the really obvious Edge of Extinction joke last week. Like, what is wrong with us, Mike?
So she comes in and she has that argument. I think like then the story of the season, much as the story of Survivor Edge of Extinction of season 38 is the twist one, right? Like it was the twist is the winner. Then in this case, it's like the Island of the Secrets is the winner, right? Like iOS is the champion. I don't necessarily think that's a great thing. I don't necessarily think that's a fantastic deal, but that's like, if this was American Survivor, at least, I think that would be the spin. I think it would also, in the way that, like the piece that I have arrived at with Edge of Extinction, or the piece that I hope to arrive at with Edge of Extinction is like, I may be able to one day look back on that season and think of it as kind of a lark. And think of it as like a ridiculous thing that happened in Survivor. And because there is such a high volume of Survivor out there, I don't mind it at all when something crazy happens, if it's just happening kind of in isolation. There's reason to think that perhaps that may not always be the case, that 38 was such a rare instance. But for iOS, maybe, I don't know. I don't know if it could potentially fall into that category. But I think that if the scenario you paint there, Shannon, comes to pass and Letitia is able to destroy Rob with the vote nullifier and she goes in and then she wins, then it's as much a victory for the Island of Secrets as it is for Letitia herself.
All right, so let me just throw out a list here. Rob, then Letitia, then Darrow, then Nicole.
Yep.
If I say that's everyone's win equity going into the finale in order, would we co-sign that?
Definitely.
Give it to me one more time.
Rob, then Letitia, based on Shannon's scenario, then Darrow, then Nicole.
Yeah, I think like I would say it's a little flexible for me with Letitia and Darrow just because of like the Darrow lovability and likability factor. But I would, just to make things easier, I'll say yes.
But the jury are not enthused about Darrow, but then they're not enthused about anyone. They like they do the most amazing Darrow impressions. I was like, is Darrow at jury villa?
Oh my God.
That was amazing.
Yeah, I don't know who did. Maybe it was Jacques. It was,
they were off camera. I was like, oh my God, Darrow, you are there right now.
That was fantastic. And yeah, I know we didn't speak too much about Darrow because he was sort of like, you know, dead puppy walking. I will say, so
that was great. That was just great TV.
With Steffi, you know, I had said throughout the season, like everyone said, oh, Nicole's the ice queen. I'm like, no. Look at Steffi. Steffi takes no prisoners. Surprisingly, this episode, I feel like they swapped places. We got a very emotional Steffi. We got this, her date with Darrow was like so not Steffi, but I actually really liked it because it was like her being super vulnerable and her just trying to laugh while Darrow, you know, tries to Mrs. Doubtfire prepare chicken and nearly lighting himself on fire.
Toodaloo!
Exactly. I wouldn't, Mrs. Doubtfire actually would be the amazing movie.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I'm your new nanny. Where's the food?
Yeah. I'm hungry.
But yeah, so I thought that was a really interesting part. They played, of course, the Rob stuff as well. But oh my God, this episode was a lot of fun. And it was a lot of fun.
It was a great episode.
I mean, look, the Steffi and Darrow stuff kind of reminded me of like Michelle Fitzgerald and Ty on their like awkward date while everyone else was at Reward, because I guess there was a connection there, but these kind of seem like really opposite people who've, you know, been voting against each other and definitely working against each other who are like left together. But I do actually want to take this moment to talk about Steffi. Because we talked about, like, Nicole, one of the better characters you'll see. Love her or hate her, you definitely have a reaction to her. That I can assure you. And I really feel like for Steffi, now that she's out of the game, I can take stock of what an important and great character she was. Like, there's so much uniqueness there. Definitely a lot of intensity there. And I do feel like a lot of the Jacques stuff crossed a line. And a lot of her game actually was pretty infuriating, obviously. But now that she's out in this way and has had this downfall, I loved it. That's like one of my favorite arcs for a person. And I know that we were like all waiting for her to get to the final tribal council to be eviscerated. As we've talked about, maybe she wouldn't have been eviscerated. She maybe could have won with the right jury, with the right people next to her. And also, I feel like we're going to get that for Nicole. It also kind of makes me a little uncomfortable to watch juries just like eviscerate a person anyway. I think for this,
we're going to get it no matter
what. Yeah, for Nicole, but just for Steffi, like, this Aula implosion and the way she went here and like looked at Rob like he, you know, like she was like Caesar being stabbed by Brutus. Like that to me was such an amazing downfall. And I can now look back in hindsight of like her being such a great character and so much of this season's brilliance being based on the fact that a lot of Saula and definitely like Steffi and Nicole are just human beings I have not seen on TV before. And I enjoyed, you know, I was intrigued by seeing those characters all season long.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd be intrigued to ask you, Josh, because, you know, again, you're speaking about story. And I think we talked, I think it was actually during the Mother Jacques episode again, with would it be more satisfying for Steffi to go to the end and get lambasted by the jury or get voted out? And I think Shannon's sort of advocating for the latter, especially because I think Steffi's turnaround from an editing perspective and maybe a jury perspective would not have led to her being as eviscerated as maybe we hope so a few, you know, months ago even. So do you agree? Do you like how Steffi sort of ended up going out here from her character arc perspective?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think it would have been great to see a little bit more of like a full boil in the tensions between her and Rob. And if that could have come to light and if that, you know, if that war could have spilled out into the light of day. But I actually don't know that would have been more satisfying than sort of like the Cold War assassination that had to occur in order to get Steffi out of the game before she could move on Rob. And certainly the moment was really, really excellent. And just like the moment where Nicole turns to her, you turned on the amigos, you betrayed us. And Steffi going, and like you said, Shannon, you mentioned this a while ago, but there is like the physical aggressiveness with which she like ties her bag on her way, that you could like feel that, you know, you could feel that across the, you know, across the screen, that like it was such a hot moment. It was like so hotly felt, that it was an excellent primal execution of a survivor player. And I adored that. I thought that Steffi was a very complicated character this season. There were moments when I really, really liked her and then moments where I did not. And it mostly circles around the Mother Jacques thing, which I thought was I don't know if there was like a cultural distinction where like that's like especially awful.
There isn't.
It's not.
Yeah.
Then I don't know.
It's a Saula distinction. It's the culture of this tribe.
it's like, can we seize on this thing and completely turn this person who is a threat to our game into a leper? You know, like it seems to be like what that was. And like, I guess, you know, that's very effective strategy. But I do feel like that is I think it's uncool to put it in a word.
Not cool,
I think
Steffi.
I think that's really uncool, man. I think that's pretty lame, dude. To play it, it's effective but lame. She was really, you know, forefront in a lot of that. Nicole and Rob should not go unscathed in the treatment of Jacques there too. And I think even Nicole had like a few moments where she's like, Jacques, go away, like, you know, like sent him off. And really put like the dunce cap on him and sent him into the corner. But I felt like Steffi was at least presented to us as feeling that the most intensely and being the lead advocate of that. So during that whole time, I really disliked it. But around the time that she got to have her double, you know, like her double feature friend visit, you know, where she's able to like gain some clarity on the game, I was very intrigued and very excited at the possibilities of her waking up to the reality of the situation and being like, I have to take out Rob if I'm to stand a chance at winning. And it was a great little mini arc. But she's somebody who feels things so intensely. She's such an intense competitor, very physical, spent a ton of time on the Island of Secrets. I thought that she brought a lot to the season. And I think that she maybe brings the most to the season with the way that she ends up going out. And I'm intrigued to see her as a juror. I'm intrigued to see like what is the volume level on how she reacts to whoever is sitting in front of her, because she's either talking to Rob or Nicole or both, and how she talks to them in this next episode, in this final episode. That's edge of your seat stuff for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of, is she going to come at them in true Steffi fashion and be like, what the hell were you doing? You were going to lose every day, but especially today. Or is she going to say, like, you know what? I was coming after you guys.
She wasn't coming after Nicole, though.
Yeah, but she was coming after Rob. So she could very much say that. What I thought was really interesting is, again, we haven't gotten her Ponderosa yet, but in her like joins the jury interview, she said at the moment she wants to vote for someone who will use the million rand for society instead of, quote, having their own agenda, which doesn't sound like something coming from Steffi. But I guess if she's about the larger sense of things, could make her vote very interesting, especially if, and I know we sort of like doted on this a bit, but I just can't get over the fact that Rob told us in confessional that he wants Nicole to win.
Let's pretend that didn't happen. That was Chrissy Teigen cringe gif. I was like, no. Not that.
So we'll see if that ends up coming to fruition. It could just be like a lark of like, oh, I'm really loving the hot dogs and the bats with Nicole. It would be great if she won. Or it could be a thing next week of like, hey, I really do want you to win. Everybody vote for Nicole, and we'll see what wackadoo outcome comes out of that. But
that'll be great. I think the jury will then vote for him just to spite him.
Yeah. But I think that to Josh's point, Steffi joining the jury is going to be extremely interesting as to how much Island of Steffi becomes Jury Steffi.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we are back. All right. Well, we have a Chizzy winner. We have a Wombat's visor. We have the person who mistakenly came onto a podcast with me and promised to make specialized hats for really two people.
I didn't realize this was going to be a big thing. That was
wrong on your part. I mean, we take the Chizzy seriously, and I promised some hats to some people. I definitely want one. Anyway, even though the Chizzy has been won, our points are still important, so let's get to the Chizzy. Take it away, Jacob Sager-Weinstein and MC Color. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, if Rob does win the game, either to this Final Four advantage or a bitter jury, do you think the fact that he's the Chizzy winner will, like, make me feel better? Or do you think that that won't even be enough?
Knowing you, Shannon, it 100% will.
Yeah, because I love the Chizzy so much, but that's how angry I would be at that outcome. So, TBD, I mean, as we've said, Rob has won just many, many times over at this point. But we do have 2 points each to give. So I'm going to give 1 point to Rob again, because, you know, look, I really, really hope he wouldn't have played his idol. I'm really keen to get into his insights into that in a deep dive. I mean, like, at the moment, we can't really say for sure. You can't say he definitely would have. It was pre-immunity. It's not, we can't say that's something he definitely would have done unless he comes on a deep dive and is like, I was definitely going to do that. I think, you know, if your allies are like, I really don't think you should play your idol at the final time for no reason, you should be suspicious. So that's another rule that I'm giving, you know, just for, you know, Survivor in general. But I did say last week that he needed Steffi to go. He needed the info to do that. And he got it done. He won both challenges. He kept himself immune, even though I don't know, maybe the Letitia going to Island of Secrets decision will be his complete downfall. I still think, like, at least he's still in the game and didn't make, like, the horrible decision that he wasn't given the opportunity to do with the idol. But I do think that if I felt that Nicole told him the information due to their relationship, purely with their relationship, then it must have worked in somehow. But if I thought that was the pure reason, I would have been giving him 2 points. But because I really do feel like it was, like, largely misguided self-preservation from Nicole, I'm just going to give him the 1 for keeping himself in the game and keeping himself immune. And then, this is going to maybe surprise people, it was a tough week, but I'm actually going to give a memorial Chizzy point to Steffi.
Okay, cool, because I was going to do the same thing. So,
oh,
now
cool.
I feel
copy and paste.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, so it wasn't a hot take. But, you know, like, Steffi, this was not her fault. Letitia really doomed her with her terrible Island of Secrets lie, and I'm impressed with the way that she pulled in Letitia. That's been underrated until now. That relationship was clearly super key, and we were the two that should have had the most power if Nicole didn't turn on it, but that wasn't Steffi's fault. So I guess Steffi's gonna, like, more than double her points right now for all giving her a point.
To be fair, though, she was, like, a bottom feeder in the Chizzy points, so I think that,
I mean, that's not a compliment when I say that. Yeah,
exactly. And look, I think that I'm gonna give us all ghost points because Durao made it through to the finale, which is incredible in my opinion. So I feel like we should all be celebrated for
you
that.
You manifested that.
Yes. Yes.
I agree. Cannot believe that. When I joke, admittedly jokingly, made him my winner pick back at the merge, I never thought in a million years that he would be in the finale, possibly be in the final three. There was a few weeks when people were like, could Durao be a winner? I don't think it's likely at this point, but we're going to see Durao in the finale. That's amazing. I'm so happy.
So who are your points?
I said copy-paste.
Oh, exactly. Robin Steffi. Yeah. Josh, are you the same as well?
Yeah, I think it's like, I don't know, like it's hard to, like, figure out how to divide it this week because, like,
a lot of people didn't do a lot of good things. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, I think, like, Steffi gets my first point, you know, and she got eliminated. So, like, where to put that other point, is like kind of radioactive anyway. So, I mean, I guess. I'm gonna give it to Letitia. I know that she maybe bungled the Island of Secrets lie, but it doesn't really matter anymore, does it? Like, she's got the thing.
Well, her main ally went home because of it, and also next week she's now outnumbered. She could go home because of that, and she was sitting pretty in the final three with Steffi and Nicole, which might have been a winning game.
But could she, and it's maybe a tall ask, but, like, can she go to Durao in this next episode and be like, if any of us go up against a combination of Rob and Nicole, we're done. I've got this thing that guarantees you and I can get to the final three and one of them does not. Like, if she's able to just apply that same strategic plan that she laid out for Steffi to Durao.
Durao, I know.
That's why I'm saying
the fate of Rob's, like, of the whole game rests on Letitia and Durao and this advantage all coming together.
There are all manner of asterisks surrounding this point. It is the number one. It is the digit one surrounded by a circle of asterisks. And the number, the digit itself is comprised of little mini pixelized asterisks as well to paint the picture. But if she is able to do that, then she gets herself into the final three.
Then she'll get a ton of cheesy points next week.
As an argument.
This week, yeah. I was actually
going to say... There aren't good people to talk about. Like, I think, like, you know, Rob did...
So
Rob was
Steffi
almost...
Two
Rob was almost convinced to not play the idol. You know, fine. If you want me to give Steffi 2 points, I'll happily give Steffi 2 points.
Well, do what you want. I'm just which points do you want to give?
I'll give it to Steffi and Letitia for the reasons I'm saying.
Well, I was
a very
asterisk
point.
I was going to call Letitia Doof of the Week just because I feel like her terrible Island of Secrets lie literally got Steffi voted out of the game, and now she's in a minority when she should have been like really running the game to a degree with Steffi. And also because the lies are so easy with Island of Secrets, like, to say nothing. It's like, how much time did you spend on that, Letitia? Give the lie some freaking respect. Spend 5 minutes. Just say you got a feast. Like, anything would have been better than to say nothing. It was so suspicious that it flipped the entire game. I'm sorry, like, I know that it's wrong to say that to a woman with not a lot of time left, and I love that this joke has now been the primary joke of 2 weeks worth of podcasts, even though it's a little bit insensitive. But... just for me, it's so doofy to say you got nothing. That's how I, like, how you feel about the advantage is how I feel about Letitia's Island of Secrets lie. The bad Island of Secrets lies really work me up, clearly.
I get it. I totally do. It was
bad
not
lies
good.
Or the bat lies.
Bats and bad Island of Secrets lies are, like, my worst two things. They're, like, the anti-chizzy to me. Like, clearly, I don't feel good about it. Actually, I want to feel a little bit better. So that's my segue into the Biostrat Variety Hour, the Take It Away Jacob Sager Weinstein, and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now, it's the Biostrat Variety Hour with your host, Shannon Gaines!
And also Mike Bloom.
Okay, well, some important things happened this week. The main thing is that for one glorious tweet, Biostrat became 2018 Biostrat. And by that I mean, what is the criteria of 2018 Biostrat? Be super savage and tag the contestants in that savagery. Okay, you have to just read this tweet. Okay, so they said, oh, there we go again at Nicole J. Kappa. You still consider yourself a contributor and not a puppet? When she went to Rob. And they tagged her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So they woke up a little bit. They've been sleeping for a little while. Maybe they're fed up with Nicole, and we'll see them bring to the finale. Hopefully, it'll be a streak and not an outlier. But I'm happy to see season 6 Biostrat back in rare form.
Yeah, they also had a poll of who do you think is making the final three with 62 votes, which is a lot. But the only options were the Amigos and the three women. And it's like, you can have more than two options in a poll.
Oh, but Rao.
Yeah, they left Rao out, and now neither of those things are happening. So completely left Rao out.
That's it. Feels like a tip off.
Yeah. Steers are not watching the show. Can I read you these Rupert tweets, Steers? Tweets.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Okay, try and find the common denominator. They only tweeted 5 times this episode. They were all horrible Rupert tweets. They said, we thought Letitia was playing small, but the fire in her game says she's a queen. Could she be the next Soul Survivor? Then, the Amigos have been playing the game since day one, but does the Alliance have the fire to make it to the top three? Also, Durrell needs more fire if he wants to... What do you think they think they need to win? There's not going to be fire at the final four because of the advantage, Steers. Keep up. It's not about the fire. Durrell needs more fire if he wants to survive tonight's tribal council and be in the top four. Those are terrible tweets.
Steers, like, I know they said they really pump up their flame grilled stuff, but, like, I don't know. Could they be like, you know, Rob, everyone's hungry to get rid of Rob so they should dig into some delicious Steers burgers. It just seems very odd that they picked one single word and base 4 different tweets around it.
No, they also said there was a photo of them making fire randomly at camp. They said, all this fire, but Nico still has to put out someone's flame. Stop talking about fire!
Wow. Steers. Flame-grilled meats, freeze-dried tweets.
Maybe the person running Steers' Twitter account is like a secret arsonist, and they're just obsessed with all the fire on Survivor, and this is how we find out.
Just it's like- the Joker.
They were all fire-related?
Just wants to watch the world.
I'm like a burger chasing a fry.
Yeah.
Do you think it's amazing that we've been calling Rob Batman this whole time and then he went to the Bat Island?
Like, whoa!
Maybe that's why he wasn't afraid.
Oh yeah.
My God.
How were they not afraid? I don't understand.
Why do we fall, Master Nico?
We fall to go to the Island of Secrets!
Yes.
So many of your references are going over my head, but I don't know how many of them are Lost references, so I'm just like going with it.
Literally none of them have been Lost. It's Ace Ventura, Mrs. Doubtfire, and Batman.
I don't have such a good, like, obviously knowledge of those things as well. I can only do Australian and South African survivors. Please keep your references to survivors.
I totally get it. I totally get it.
I don't have other hobbies. This is all I have. Okay, so now we've talked sad things about me.
Yeah, I can't comment on that any further. I'm just heartbroken for you, so.
If Rob wins, it's okay. If he doesn't win, then I've really invested a lot of time.
For you, I revoke everything that I have said on this podcast, and I am full-throatedly, full-heartedly endorsing a victory for Rob, if it will make Shannon Gates' life.
I will. Well, it will make my whole life. I'm like also really rooting for Luke on Australian Survivor.
Yeah. Me as well.
Rob is Shannon empowerment.
Okay, then yeah. I am rooting for Rob. I take it all back. I want Rob to win. I am all about Shannon empowerment. 100%. 108%.
I came onto this podcast intending to be like, yes, Queen Rob, and I haven't said it yet. So I'm just shoehorning it into now, considering that he is woman empowerment.
Wow. You are to Yas Queen Rob as steers us to flames.
Yeah, shoehorning it in where it really doesn't belong. Yeah, steers. You think they could pay someone to watch the damn episode, but they're not. So it's disappointing. Some questions that we had. John wants to know who from the Survivor South Africa season is going to get a huge head statue.
I mean, like, Rob has a huge, you know, ego on him right now, and so does Nicole. They would probably be the ones at the moment.
And listen, they're nice looking heads, so I wouldn't.
Yeah, they'd be great. They'd be fantastic. I agree.
If there's going to be a giant Nicole head, so I'm disappointed that our podcast is not a video podcast for one reason, and that is that I can do the perfect Nicole voting confessional, which I watch every week on the Mnet website, and it is just, it's the same every single week. She holds up her vote. See, it's hard because it's not a visual podcast. I can tell you it's perfect. She like closes her eyes and she just shakes her head before she says their name, closes her eyes and shakes their head, and it's brilliant. And if they ever make a head statue of her, I want it in that exact expression. The perfect Nicole expression.
You got to take to Instagram and record that video.
Yeah,
I think that's an important thing for you to do. I think it's very important.
I would like a Jacques statue, but only if the hair is made exclusively out of purple paint.
Yeah, Jacques would be a good one. Sipe? Queen Sipe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. That could be a good one as well. Let's make a Tanya head just for the fun of it, because then her dad will try to rob it.
Let's make a giant statue of Nathan's injured foot.
Yes, a four-toed statue of Nathan's foot.
Yeah, that's a Lost reference.
That reminds me. So we obviously have thank you for letting me know when I don't understand.
Yes, but anyway, I got you.
So we have Josh's Chizzy visors, his Wombat's visors for the Chizzy winner. One thing I've wanted to do this whole time and haven't said it is that we have at Rob Survivor, right? Mike, you know, swooped that up when Rob Bentil didn't want that anymore, and now he's at Rob Bentil instead of at Rob Survivor. So we have that and we have nothing to do with it. Like, I've always felt like we should give it to the Chizzy winner, but now the Chizzy winner is Rob. Also, why won't that account follow me back, Mike? Like, I've been asking it for, I literally tweeted and I asked it for a follow and it hasn't followed me back.
I don't remember the password.
No, we have to give it to Rob. How could you have wasted it?
No, I mean, I can log into it. Liam has 19 followers, followed by Jeff. Okay.
So he is going to vote for Rob. He's following.
Yeah, maybe this is the big hint.
Yeah, well, okay, on that note, that is actually all of the questions that I do have today. I really do feel like if Rob doesn't win next week, I don't even know what I'm going to say. But I'm going to go in hoping for the best, kind of like Mike did, you know, for Doral this week, and then Doral made it through, and it was a happy Doral get in for all. So hopefully Rob's reckoning won't come. In terms of the hashtag, I've got hashtag why Doral K. That was an early one. Hashtag Mrs. Doral fire. I'm seeing a pattern of how we felt.
Wow, that's so good. I think it has to be Mrs. Doral.
Yeah, Mrs. Doral fire. You're a survivor winner, ladies and gentlemen. No.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh, but this was unbelievable fun. I think that, you know, I've loved our podcast the entire season, but I don't know, nothing beats three uber survivor nerds just like loudly talking at one another energetically about how much they love Survivor. It really is second to none. So I've had an immense amount of fun talking about an immensely fun episode of Survivor South Africa. And we'll see what happens next week, Shannon, when you and I wrap the whole kit and caboodle up.
I feel like you just got another one for my tombstone. Survivor nerd, loudly and energetically talking at people. That's who I am. You summed it up. But I'm glad that I get to do it with you guys. As I've said, you know, women empowerment personified, having the three of us on this podcast. Josh, thank you so much for coming on. I feel like we got into a lot of it, and it was just super, super fun to talk with both of you, even though your references go over my head.
It was a blast. Thank you for having me. You guys are doing such tremendous work out here on the Survivor SA beat. And obviously, I am a filthy casual when it comes to international Survivor. And I watched half of this season on double speed. So take my takes very, very lightly. But I really appreciate you guys having me on. It was an absolute blast. And I'm looking forward to getting on the horn with you guys again in a little while from here.
Yeah, fittingly, I feel like this was the first time like the Ting Ting vote wasn't mentioned all season on the podcast. So that was something that happened in episode 3, Josh, that you might have sped past. But I know you guys are doing a lot that lets you guys talk to each other and come up with references behind the scenes that you know I'm not going to understand. So, Josh, what else do you have going on that everyone should check out?
Yeah, I mean, Mike and I are podcasting every single week on post-show recaps, the scripted TV arm of the RHAP empire, where we are doing Down the Hatch, a Lost rewatch podcast. We are rewatching every single episode of the epic television series, also based on an island called Lost, an island of secrets in its own right. And we are, it is a show that has been off the air for very close to a decade at this point. And Mike and I are going through it in full spoiler detail. So it's not a podcast that is safe for a first time viewer of Lost. But if you have watched Lost and you were not aware that Mike and I are doing this podcast, A, I'm a little surprised. But B, we invite you to join us because we are having an absolute blast talking about every nook and cranny of Lost with lots of ridiculous impressions and fanficking along the way. And it's been an utter joy to do. And I hope that you'll join us. Down the Hatch. PosterRecaps.com/downthehatch is how you can subscribe to our Apple feed. And you can subscribe to Down the Hatch on your podcast app of choice.
Mike, I'm sorry that I gave that question to Josh first, but what else do you have going on?
So I am Big Brother has started to wane down a bit as well. I've been doing exit press for parade.com there, and I'll also be doing an iteration of the Big Brother RHAP BMB with Leon and Boris this week as well, as we all begin to transition to another Survivor season. Survivor Island of the Idols is finally upon us. I think we can officially say, because CBS, you know, did announce it at the time that this is being recorded on Monday, September 9th, the official preseason for Survivor Island of the Idols will launch with a cast release. And Josh and I were both out there on set preseason. We got to see the big giant heads in person. It was one of the most fun and enjoyable experiences of my entire life, getting to experience this really great cast, this really interesting season, and just to see the Survivor experience from a completely different perspective alongside Josh's expertise was an unbelievable.
I thought you were going to say experience. Alongside Josh's giant head, which I was going to be mildly offended by, but also amused by.
Very regular sized head for Josh, but I should be having, you know, Josh and I will both be having content coming out. Josh, obviously in audio form, and I will have some sort of written piece about Survivor out every day from Monday until the premiere of Survivor Island of the Idols, between cast interviews, between, you know, some interviews with the production, and between interviews with Rob and Sandra themselves. I hope you all get to partake and enjoy at parade.com. Yes. We have that coming very, very soon as we begin to shift gears out of international Survivor and promptly into U.S. Survivor for the next year or so.
Yeah, Mike and I are going to be recording with Rob. We're going to do a little bit of a preview podcast of what to know about the Island of the Idols. Rob and I are going to be going through all of the podcast interviews that I did with all of the contestants. It's not going to be the bells and whistles first one out from me this season, but the interviews are really, really fun, and I think you're going to enjoy listening to them. So they will be right here on RHAP. And then I'll have a couple of other podcasts that are popping up along the way in the preseason over at The Hollywood Reporter, where I have my series regular podcast, which is typically focused on genre TV. But we're going to make a few Survivor exceptions for the Survivor preseason. So that's how you'll be able to hear all of my stuff. Go to thr.com/survivor is where you'll be able to find the series regular podcast. You can also subscribe to series regular on your podcast app of choice as well. And I'm really fun to with alongside Mike introduce you guys to the cast of Island of the Idols. I think it's a really, really fun group of individuals, and I'm really excited to see how they play.
There's a lot of Survivor going on, you guys.
There's so much Survivor going on. There's so much. And Australian Survivor is getting very close to the finish line, and I can't wait. It's the best. It's so good.
Yeah, so
good.
Australian Survivor now, I think it's confirmed, is ending 4 days after Survivor South Africa. The finale's in the same week. Why? What? All of this? Mike's kid is in high school, and Survivor South Africa started when he was born.
Yeah. I need to take a break from his driving lessons to talk about this international Survivor, which we should also say, because, I think we can officially say it now, right? If you enjoy the three of us talking together, especially about international Survivor, we are going to be talking together about the Australian Survivor finale as well, which I'm very, very pumped about. I've had the really blessed opportunity to do that the past couple seasons, and considering just how amazing this season has been so far, I can only imagine where we go from here, especially talking about it with the two of you.
Yeah. Oh, it's gonna be definitely a lot of, what did you say, Survivor nerds talking fast and energetically? Whatever you said, it was accurate. So we're going to be doing that on the finale. I mean, last week I spoke about week 7, but episode, I don't know, 1 million with Tess O'Halloran. And next week I have the great Rick Devins, who was obviously on the Survivor South Africa podcast with us, which I had a lot of fun with. He's really like the Survivor community's newest international Survivor super fan. So he's
correspondent, you know, even.
Yes, definitely. I mean, look, Rob hasn't even been able to get Rick on a recap because there's not been a US Survivor season since he played, and I'll have had him on too. So really just getting him into the recap game for the rest of his career as a Survivor podcaster, definitely on RHAP, but he's coming on next week. There's something else I wanted to plug, is that there's a charity event. It's a 5-day Survivor game involving 8 US Survivors, 8 Survivor South African contestants, and 8 fans. And then there's also going to be meet and greets around South Africa. I know we have a lot of South African listeners. Like, this is so cool. There's such a good list of survivors. I mean, Bryce is doing it, Wendell, Tom from, you know, the winner of last season, Bob Crowley. Like, it's really quite a list. So if you want some more information about that and where you might be able to meet some of these players, there is a group on Facebook titled Worth Playing For. Also, just get in contact with Bill Weeble or myself if you can't find it, and I can maybe point you to some of those events. It's for a really good cause. Obviously, it's like for a school for underprivileged children, so it's a really great cause as well. So definitely get in touch about that, because that's a really cool opportunity for our Survivor South Africa fans in South Africa.
I mean, just the opportunity alone to see Bryce and Tom interact is worth the price of admission, in my opinion.
Yeah, so that'll be amazing. So definitely, you know, get in touch if you can't find that. But yeah, next week, Mike and I will be wrapping up the finale together of Survivor South Africa.
God, and really it's happening.
Possibly crying and possibly celebrating. I don't know. It's been a huge season. As I've said, I love this episode. I love being able to talk about it with both of you. It was just such a fun time. But you guys should also subscribe to the International Survivor Wrap-Ups feeds, because deep dives are coming as well for Australia, for South Africa. Luke also took the initiative of announcing that he'll be coming on the deep dive for Australia on Twitter today. So
I can't wait. Oh, that's so good. That's such great news.
And this cast as well, we have, you know, some really, really good deep dives that we have organized with people. So that's going to be amazing. Until then, follow all of us at Round Howard, at A Mike Bloomtype, and at Shannon Gates. And yeah, this has been an amazing time. So thank you all for listening. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Mike. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And we will be back, I can't believe I'm saying this, to wrap up the finale next week. So happy to all get into all. Bye.
To all a good night.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.